Welcome back to the second hour of the broadcast, people. This is Chris Gerner with American Exposé. May 22nd, 2005, Parade Magazine listeners. Can they be stopped? By Earl Swift. More than 7,000 invasive species, actually invasive plants, animals, and insects have reached our shores. These intruders are creating havoc in our waterways, forests, cities, and backyards. It says here, well, not long ago, workers in Detroit opened a shipment of goods from the Far East and in the process unleashed a monster. No one could say who the workers were, what they unloaded, or what year the event occurred. Beyond that, it was probably in the 1990s, but it seems that stowed away inside the wooden pallets or crates that protected the cargo were the larvae of a half-inch-long iridescent beetle, so foreign to the West that it had no English name. It has one now. In 2002, the emerald ash borer had multiplied from a few grubs in an army to an army. It had killed millions of ash trees in the southeastern Michigan. Infested legions more and jumped into neighboring states. Up to 15 million trees may now be dead or doomed. So vast is the insect spread that officials fear that ash, valued in furniture, flooring, and baseball bats, as well as for the shade, might go the way of the tree and the often been planted and replaced the American elm, another foreign invader. Welcome to the downside of global trade, along with cheap goods from China, linens from Europe, and seafood from South America. A host of unwanted plants, animals, insects, and microbes have been penetrating our borders. Okay, so according to this article, they're unwanted, but according to CITES, as you call it, it's wanted.
Well, the UN is... How can I say this? In the last 2 years, I've been to three meetings about invasive species in Washington, D.C. And one of those meetings was in a lawyer's office in a big, great, big, fancy meeting room. And there must have been 20 people in there. I recognized all of them. Some of them work for the government right now, and some of them work for these big lobby groups. And there was two women sitting over in the corner. When the meeting was over, I asked the fellow sitting next to me, I said, who are those two women sitting over there in the corner? He said, oh, those are UN representatives. I said, are you in? Oh, yeah. He said, they work over in Switzerland. And they come over here, and they work very closely with our government on trying to develop invasive species legislation. So you see the connection there. And when you read things like you do, that stuff is put out periodically. It's true. There's no problem, no doubt about that. But that's been going on, too, for thousands of years.
Right.
Plants have come and gone. The insects have come and gone. They've gotten here on logs. They've gotten here in storms, they've gotten here on birds. There's a lot of what I've gotten here on ships, and they came here with the Asians, etc. But be that as it may, the idea that we need to have federal authority to do something about it is crazy. We can be doing research on these things. The states can take action. The federal government can help coordinate state efforts and state programs in a voluntary way, and everything is fine. But that's not what it's about. It's about authority and power. And let me give you an example of something. You just read that article and said, I mean, most people would say, oh, my gosh, why don't they do something? Well, I had an article here about 3 weeks ago in the papers here in Washington, D.C., that said 925 species of plants and animals have been identified by the Virginia Department of Fish and Game as approaching endangered status in the state. And if something isn't done pretty soon, things are going to change, the native ecosystem is going to collapse, blah, 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 blah. Well, I read that, and then what I figured was this, and this is what I think I would advise you about hidden agendas. For the last 20 years, the biggest priority for state fish and game departments and their lobby group in Washington and the Fish and Wildlife Service has been to get them money for non-game programs. In other words, for things other than ducks and deer and bears and geese and fishing for perch and bass and all that stuff.
Let's continue on the other side. We'll bring TJ up as well. Ominous times, listeners. Not being covered by the major press, obviously. We'll be right back. welcome back to the broadcast. As you support this network, as you support my airtime, the Berkville, the Berkey Light, is very, very important to purchase listeners at $259. And you get a free sports bottle with that purchase and the filters. Very important to do this if you want to continue to listen to this broadcast. That's the bottom line, people. The new number for this is 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. And that's $259 for the Berkey Light with a free sports bottle, listeners. And we're moving to 11920, WWRB, 11920. And that's just the way it is, listeners. It has to be. So I need to explain to certain people the situation at this juncture and where that funding is going to go. But keep in mind, the new Berkey Light is 877-605-9200. Let's bring TJ up real quickly. I'm sorry for the wait, TJ. Welcome to the broadcast. Hello, TJ.
Yeah, can you hear me okay, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Okay, both you gentlemen are doing a much better job of Aurea's oration on this subject. At 11:35 hour, both you guys know that I'm on the ground fighting, rewilding of mountain lions in a flat-as-a-pancake state called Iowa. At 11:35 hours approximately, the Iowa DNR fur bear biologist, now, he was the fur bear biologist. We do not know if he was usurped by another DNR official, but he called me. I've known this man for 30-plus years. He informed me he wanted to call in and do a roundtable with Jim Beers, myself, you, Chris, whatever. He was informed by the powers that be, he said, that's a direct quote, that he could not get on this show today. And the reason is, they're a bunch of shadowy liars at the DNR and the UN, and they will not talk straight up about what the ultimate goal is, about their paycheck, and about politics and bureaucracies and power control, and that's what this is about. I want to quote Fur Fish Game. Jim, everybody in Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, and Wisconsin owes you a debt of gratitude if we get this Iowa mountain lion thing defeated, because it's going to take a lot, because these legislators, lawmakers, are going to try to ram it down our throats. It says here, a quote from Terry Little regarding mountain lions in Iowa. There needs to be a positive approach to get them back on the fur bear list. That's a lie. They've never been on the Iowa fur bear list. There's an occasional species or occasional mountain lion that comes into this state, and the citizens do a very good job of managing mountain lions in Iowa. Additionally, it says that the DNR, the Iowa DNR, will prevent indiscriminate killing of the cats. Well, I don't know of anyone who could indiscriminately kill a mountain lion. If you can't tell a mountain lion from a feral tomcat, you better stay in front of your flat screen and stay out of the fields, forests, streams, and woodlands. It says also there's a website called mountainlion.org. I want to tell you how these guys lie, and they don't even blush about it anymore, Jim. This mountainlions.org, it says, and this is hosted or co-hosted by somebody that claims to be religious. And he's a Dr. James, or let's see. We got Dr. James Mahaffey. He's a biology college professor at Dort College. And he's pushing to protect mountain lions in Iowa. Wally Taylor, he's another one on this transcript. He's the legal counsel for the Sierra Club of Iowa. And here's what Wally has to say. Well, when humans are dangerous, sometimes too, if you learn to live with them and give them enough space, they're not going to be a problem for humans. And then he goes on to say, or Mr. Severson says, as we continue to invade their territory, we're the invasive species, Jim, here to these people, and as a result, they ours, it's an experience that may become more common unless someone gets hurt. Then what happens to the cougar? They will they survive? Only in a cage. That's a bold-faced lie. I love mountain lions. I've witnessed them live in the wild in central Mexico, and they belong in the mountains. They belong in Montana, New Mexico, Colorado. And I'm sure them hound dog cat runners will appreciate that, and I will too if I want to hunt a mountain lion. I don't want to bump into him while I'm hoeing my sweet corn garden. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, you've really covered the subject very well. Let me just reiterate what you said and make a comment or two.
Sure.
When these people, like you're talking about, give you this nonsense about we need a positive approach to something like mountain lions in a heavily populated state like Iowa, I can only say that a public employee getting paid by tax dollars has got a responsibility to the welfare of the electorate and the taxpayers and the citizens of that state. And I ask you if the death of a child or the death of a young high school person or the death of some old lady walking alone who gets killed by one of these animals or harmed severely is supposedly a worthwhile cost for us to absorb because of somebody saying something silly like, we've got to be positive about these animals if they pop up here. That's just absolutely nutty nonsense.
Well, people got to start thinking, and the audience that listens to Chris Gerner is a thinking populace, and they have to do one of two things. They have to pound on the brows of their neighbors about what's going on with UN in this country, or they're going to lose their farm. They're going to lose their house. They're going to be living in a mobile home like the victims of some hurricane in Florida. And I don't really want to have to put more bells on my beagles just to run rabbits around a bunch of mountain lions.
Well,
if I want to hunt mountain lions, I'm going to go to Colorado or Montana. The guy that initiated this Iowa action, his name is Richard A. Bishop. Right today, he's hunting caribou in Manitoba. I just talked to his wife. I wish he was on here with us, but he has a sentimentality for mountain lions because of his experience in Montana. So do I. But let him stay in Montana. Let him stay in the mountains. And, you know, Dick Cheney, he loves to hunt pheasants, ringneck pheasants. They came from China. What's poor Dick Cheney going to do when we rewild South Dakota back to buffalo and prairie chickens? He's going to have to just, I don't know what he's going to do them hunting seasons. We've got to pick a point in time. When are we going to rewild this country? Are we going to go back to cannibals, the Great Flood, 1950, 1964? No, I say, let's rewild it now, and let's let the citizens take care of it more than a bureaucracy. That's what I say, Jim Beers.
Well, keep in mind that these guys that you mentioned are all going to make money and get power out of this.
I know.
For instance, the DNR, when they put that thing on the fur bearer list or let it go on the endangered list, will immediately start asking for federal funding for research and management and restoring and reintroducing and studying. This university professor that you said was called up and said to be somewhat of an expert on this.
Yes, Dr. James Mahaffey, and he's a professor at Dort. I would call it Dork, but it's spelled D-O-R-D-T, College in Sioux Center, Iowa.
Well, just like with endangered species, when you get somebody up that says, oh, I think we ought to list the Indiana bat, or I think we ought to list the Jim Beers fescue, or whatever you want to come up with, the guy that says that, the professor, is the first guy in line when the grant money comes down, okay?
You got it. You
so
got
he's
got
to get some money out of it. And the Sierra Club lawyer, where do you think he makes his money?
That's
it's
right.
Sure as heck not after chasing ambulances. It's from lawsuits about, oh, we've got to put the endangered status here on the mountain lion. Oh, you want to negotiate just putting it on fur bear status? Okay, let's sit down here. And he's churning up hours all the time to get paid by the people from Boston and Los Angeles – to do this stuff in Iowa. So they've all got a dog in this race here, and they're all making money behind the scenes to implement something that makes no sense.
That's right.
You know, I think the people of Iowa, what they've got to do is they've got to insist that there be a public discussion and information about how many of these there are, how they're to be handled, whether or not the people want them present in the state, and what the future is going to be like. You should not let the Sierra Club or some university professor or a bunch of state bureaucrats. And as I understand it, in Iowa, your state, the Fish and Game Agency is under a Fish and Wildlife Commission. So the
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I just got off the phone about an hour ago with the DNR headquarters at the Wallace Building in Des Moines. They don't know what the Iowa Wildlife Commission is, because there is no such entity that wants to show its face. It is the Iowa DNR, its retirees, and other bureaucrats that depend upon their retirement money from the Iowa DNR to keep them going and let them go on hunting trips to Manitoba. That's what it's about.
Well, you got to get your politicians that you elect to exercise authority over your state agencies, and through your politicians, you make the decision, Iowa citizens, whether or not you want to worry about every time your grandkids come to visit your suburban house or your place along the river.
Producing the world's best air purifier.
Back to the broadcast. Keep in mind, it's imperative for you to support the network, listeners. I mean, there's no other way around it. You have to support this network. Republic Trading Post is there for you to purchase goods to help the network continue. The Berkey Light with the free sports bottle, 877-605-9200, 877-605-9200. You've got to support this network, listeners, as we try to do the best we can, as we've had Jim Beers on for the last hour and 20 minutes. Here we've talked about endangered species, invasive species, and the machinations going on behind that, yet business and industry moving out of this country, below the border and overseas, bringing back slave labor products made in other countries. Listeners, our sons and daughters, fathers and mothers, off in another Vietnam. Another UN-Vietnam War, listeners. This is the coalition under the UN system. The bottom line is, it's the UN-America. That's the situation we have. TJ, a parting shot for you, and we'll move on, my friend.
I just want to give both of you my personal blessing. You're doing great, Jim. The whole middle of the United States owes you a word of gratitude for what you're doing to fight the UN and rewilding in America. God bless you. I'm out.
Thank you, CJ. Let's move to John in Florida. John, welcome to the broadcast. Sorry for the wait.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
About 9 or 10 months ago, I applied to the Selective Service Board to just find out, you know, how I could get involved if there was a draft figuring. I'd get some information, you know, preceding it. And this morning I received an email from the Selective Services saying that in response to my request, They are looking for approximately 100 board members for the state of Florida, and basically that's what I've got. So they want me to fill out a form and see if I qualify to be part of the Selective Service.
And isn't that natural?
Yep. And they say that if the military draft becomes necessary, approximately 2,000 local boards throughout America will decide which men in each community will receive deferments, postponements, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there are two training classes to attend.
And there you go. So they're rewilding America, invasive species, endangered species, and the business and industry going below the border overseas, and our military doing the UN work,
mm-hmm.
and the draft being implemented.
Yeah, so this is, I'm not sure if I'm going to fill out this form and send it in just to see what kind of response I get, but I might, just to see what the next step would be. But, you know, they're sending these things out to whoever applied, and I applied, you know, like I said, 9 or 10 months ago. And this is the first response of any type of, you know, literature or anything I got from them.
Well, keep us informed, John.
No problem. So I'm going to fill it out, and I'll call back with the response I get from that.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. John in Florida, going to be on the Selective Service Board, maybe, for the draft, listeners. Invasive species, endangered species, rewilding America, and yet business and industry disappearing, military going overseas for the UN system, borders open, catastrophe as a weather weapon down south, relocating populations in America today. Let's move to another caller, Sean in Indiana. Welcome, John. Hello, Sean.
Jim, and you know, in the States, we can't even feed our people. We can't even fix our sewers. We can't even fix our schools. Where do you expect the state to get the money to make sure that nature stays the way it is and that we don't tear it down like we are? I mean, if people want to volunteer to be on the board of DNR, if you want to take the bureaucracy out of it and everything, the DNR and all those agencies will gladly accept volunteers. But the big problem is that needs to be done. Nobody wants to do it. And when we can't even fix, and we can't even take care of our own species right now, then where are the resources going to come to make sure that people that live in rural areas will still be living in rural areas in 20 years?
They don't want people living in rural areas, do they, Jim?
No, they don't. And let me just address that very directly. What I maintain, and I'm a wildlife biologist and worked all over the place. I lived in Alaska and a lot of other places while I was in the Navy. Been overseas, been to Europe and to Asia. When you say they're tearing nature down, we've got these invasive species here. Why, species are becoming endangered. All I can say to you is that the environment has always been changing, and that Indiana today is nothing like it was 100 years ago, much less 200 years ago or 500 years ago.
And that's because we just keep on building out and out and out.
That's
if
correct.
If we take care of nature, we will still live in rural areas, especially with a new eminent domain Supreme Court law.
You
so
will still
build
hold on, caller. Let Jim respond. Go ahead.
Okay,
you will still have a good place to live because you've made it like you want to live in it, and there is nothing wrong with that. And as far as nature goes, and the species that are there, if you have many different species than you had 100 years ago, some of them may be harmful, some of them may be beneficial, and it's a constant job to keep up with them. But you don't need a massive new bureaucracy to restore something.
Well, are you going to volunteer to do it?
What do you think I'm doing on this radio program or what I'm writing? That's what I'm trying to do. I'm a retired guy doing the best I can, and I do this 7 days a week.
We'll be back to continue with the broadcast. Stay with us. Broadcast. That number for the Berkey Light has been changed. It's 877-605-9200. 877-605-9200. That's the new number to purchase the Berkey Light at $259, plus a free sports bottle as well. 877-605-9200. Let's move to Tim in Florida. Tim, welcome to the broadcast, Tim.
Chris, I called yesterday about the rack machine and et cetera.
Yes.
Jim, you were a wildlife inspector for, was that one of your jobs in the past?
Well, I was a special agent, the only one, as a matter of fact, for 2 years in New York City, made a couple of big cases up there, so I was like a wildlife inspector and special agent at a port of entry for 2 years in New York City. I lived out in Long Island and had an office at Kennedy Airport.
Okay, I heard this about a year ago, but I haven't heard it since. A lady, a doctor, was saying about estrogen that they put in the meats and in their foods, and they put it in the cattle to make them bigger. So when we eat the foods, we get estrogen in our body. And when we urinate, the estrogen goes in the water, and because you can't purify the estrogen, you can't get rid of it. And she was saying that there's more female fish in the water now than male fish. I don't. Since you were inspector, did you ever hear that?
I have heard speculation about that over the years, but I have never seen any research that would credit it. And frankly, regarding fish, since fish aren't monogamous, in other words, one male and one female each year, and they try to raise their young, generally the female, most fish lays eggs, and the male swims over it and sort of discharges sperm, and then
right.
does that to another one. So that the real dramatic impact of having a few more females, if anything, should be a strengthening thing, I would think, in a population like fish that I've got either pollution problems or overfishing problems or whatever, that would be a good thing. But I've never really seen any research that would lend credence to that.
Okay. This thing about putting wildlife in populated areas, that's another thing about population control. Along with this hurricane that the Navy have done, this Hurricane Rita, number 17, if you add 7 and 1, it's the number 8. And number 8 is the number for Lucifer. In the Bible, it says after the working of Satan, he is the 8th, the number 8. But anyway, you're doing a great job. This is the first time, or second day I've heard your show, Chris.
Oh.
And it is awesome to hear this. And Jim, I pray that you are safe and that the evil people... Wait a minute. The Jewish Talmud. I've been studying the Jewish Talmud. And they say that the Goyim is like goats and asses. When they say danger to species, that's what they say that we are, goats and asses. The Jewish
That's why our
Talmud.
Children are called kids today.
Yes, that's what a kid is.
Well.
But anyway, a website called comeandhear.com exposes the Talmud and how it's totally awful. And the way the world is run today, the protocols of the Elders of Zion that was written a long time ago, it's coming to a head today. Endangered species is the white race. In 1933, they collateralized the people, and they put $1 million bond on each person, each human being that's born, and $1 million bond. And when that child reaches a certain age, that bond gets started, and the labor from that child pays off that bond. Well, when the mother signs the birth certificate, which she's under, she's sedated, or she doesn't really know, I was just, when my parents did it, everybody did it, I'll do it too. Well, she just gave her child to the government, and now that child became a dummy corporation, fictitious juristic person. Person means fiction, it doesn't mean real. An individual means citizen resident, which means controlled by the government and registered to the government. Now the government owns you, and they can do whatever they want to with you, like take your guns, take your property, because it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the government because it's registered. We are brainwashed into thinking we have to register our private property, ourself, our children. But, you know, it's all about population control, the New World Order. Anyway, that's all I have to say for right now. But
thank you, Tim.
Keep up the good work.
I appreciate your thoughts.
You're in my prayers.
Thank you.
Okay, take care, Jim.
Okay.
Any comment, Jim?
Yeah, he's from Florida, and he mentioned wildlife and populated areas. I don't know if he's aware of it or other Florida listeners might be, but the Fish and Wildlife Service, quite a few years ago now, declared the bears in Florida, like the bears in Louisiana, to be threatened. That's a legal status right under endangered. And because the federal government declared them to be threatened, the state cannot have a hunting season on them. And in the last 5 years especially, the number of complaints from people that have had attacks from bears and had their beehives destroyed or had their pets killed or had them in their yard, my own daughter's had them in her backyard recently, has gone way up each year, bigger and bigger complaint numbers, and that's because the population is increasing. And just as an example of how the facts can be perverted, you would think that people would understand that you need to cull the number of bears and reduce their numbers back. So you should have a hunting season that takes X number out every year. But in fact, all you're seeing in Florida is these animal rights people and the state quietly going along with it, saying that, oh gosh, there's a lot of bears getting killed on this cross Florida highway. And this superhighway over here, there's been a lot of bear collisions, and we can't afford to lose these bears because they're threatened. And we need to have better control of the traffic. And maybe we shouldn't have this road there because that's the bear's habitat. In fact, all you're looking at is the evidence that there are too many bears. And the fact that they're endangering drivers, whether it's a woman with a car or a van load of kids, or some salesman who's tired or looking down who hits one of these things or sees one and swerves in front of a truck, that's the real danger. So we look at, again, wildlife being used totally in a crazy way. In other words, too many bears is an excuse for reducing people, reducing traffic, closing a road, instead of a common sense approach to say, gee, we've got too many bears here. We need to reduce these numbers or not have bears in this particular area.
Well, isn't under this biodiversity treaty, isn't there road removal that's going to be mandated?
Oh, you bet. That's all part of the roadless area problems they've got with the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management and the way they're closing down both public roads that go across public lands as well as roads that go back into public lands when they make wilderness areas. And
isn't it ironic, Jim, that so many people have four-wheel drive vehicles today, and they don't have any place to take them?
Yep, you bet.
You know what?
I'd like to say something about that lady from here, a man from Indiana, I believe it was just a few minutes ago, talking about nature and that.
Right.
I grew up, I'm 64 now, I grew up in Illinois. And 50 years ago, I was all over the place hunting and fishing, and I know a lot about the prairies and that country. And, you know, to hear somebody complain about nature today, when I was a kid, there was pheasants and quail and rabbits all over Illinois, and there were no turkeys, no deer, and no coyotes. And now we got turkeys, deer, and coyotes all over the area. And trees like Osage oranges and walnuts were great things, even though they were not native species out there. They were a great addition both for hunting and fishing and wood and eating walnuts and bur oaks, you know, that were there before. There aren't as many there now, and that's all great. And we've got resident Canada geese all over the place when we never had breeding Canada geese 50 years ago, and those are all wonderful changes. So when people think that things are terrible and bad and the environment is getting worse and worse and worse, that's not true. And they need to look at the fact that there is change, and some of it's pretty rapid, and they need to manage that change. They need to take care of the harmful species and provide for the beneficial ones. And that's not a giant job. That's a simple job that we can all take care of and that government can help us with. And we don't need to turn to government as an absolute answer to these things. So,
well,
I just wanted to say that.
Isn't that the problem? Too much government in interference in our lives today?
Not only interference, it's all of us looking to government. I'm still amazed that everybody nods when the federal government says we're going to rebuild New Orleans. Like, I can see them helping people, certainly, and helping the state and trying to provide services and that. But by golly, rebuilding is the decision of the people that own the homes that were ruined, the people that had businesses there, Do they want to reestablish the business there or move it further up the river or over to some other place? Can they have refineries in better spots? Can they have a downtown area someplace farther away? Can the federal government increase the deep sea channel that goes to go further up the river so that they can have a business center up there and warehouses and docks and oil company offices, and the people that work there can decide to live somewhere else and not rebuild below sea level? And just because they have a French Quarter there that has all of these terrible sex things and everything else going on in there, that somehow the federal government very certainly ought to be the one to rebuild it and determine where what is and where they'll put the money. I mean, that's crazy. This country wasn't built on that kind of assumption.
Let me ask you, with your knowledge of what you've learned over the years, with what happened in New Orleans and the surrounding area, do you think it was created?
Oh, you bet. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the place that they started New Orleans, it had to be there. The French that first went down there,
uh-huh,
put it in the right place, the closest place that they could get ships up to out of the Gulf and offload them and load them back up with stuff that came down the river in shallower drafts and everything else. And, yeah, it was a kind of a flooded place, but as you can just see, the French Quarter in the old downtown there is still a high spot. So, I mean, there's certainly a good location there, but the city spread out to all these other lower areas. As it did, they decided to build dikes and whatever. And the whole southern Louisiana, if you think of this, that the Mississippi River going down there carries all this silt from Minnesota and Indiana and Missouri and South Dakota and everything else, carries all this silt year in and year out, a lot more than it used to 200 years ago because there's fields up there and there's heavy rain now and then. But be that as it may, that silt that comes down the river used to just kind of make new marshes out there. But you can't have it spreading out over the marshes and flooding occasionally and making new marsh and restoring that land if you're going to have big ships come up to New Orleans. So you had to keep the thing in a deep channel. And what it does now is just go out into the Gulf and dump off into the deeper water. So you've got settling going on. You add that to the fact that they're taking oil and gas out from underneath Louisiana, and you've got some settlement there. So that's just a fact of life. You're losing some of the marsh every year, all up and down that coast down there around Louisiana. So the fact that you would rebuild it there should be looked at in view of that, not just that you got to build levees around it and whatever, but maybe it should be further up the river in a better location that's more stable and can be better protected, and you're going to make a deeper channel up to it, and then you're not going to have the problems that you've got right now with a major metropolis and all of the facilities for oil and ships and grain and everything else going on in there in such a vulnerable area. That's a reasonable thing to look at. But the fact that we say, oh, gosh, look at this terrible disaster. Oh, the federal government's going to save it and rebuild it for us. Isn't that wonderful? And just plop it right back in there with the same kind of a setup just simply because there's a mayor down there and he wants to get taxes going under his jurisdiction and a lot of people want to go back to where they used to live and all that. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, we could provide all kinds of assistance to people. I don't have any problem with that. But by golly, the thing that made this country great, as opposed to Russia and China and those places, was that we didn't have the government making those decisions. We had businessmen and people that wanted to work for them, making the decision about where the best place for the dock is. And if you're going to work on the dock, you decide to live up there or down over there or way over that way or right nearby or whatever. And that's who should make those decisions, not a bunch of bureaucrats sitting in Washington saying this money is just for homes in this here spot where they used to be. I mean, that may or may not be the best place to be. But having government make those decisions, I mean, the whole darn country looks at that and says, oh, wow, that's a great idea. I don't think it's a very great idea at all. But that tells you how far we've come looking to government for the answer to every problem that crops up in front of us.
Now, Jim, I'm looking at an article that's on our website, New Orleans is Sinking. It's by Jim Wilson from Popular Mechanics, and it's dated September 11th, 2001.
Yep.
September 11th, 2001 was when the World Trade Center went down, the attack on America, so to speak. Pentagon, building number 7, imploded.
Chris, I have been seeing stuff go across my desk when I worked for the government since the early 1980s about subsidence in southern Louisiana. The marshes are subsiding, the wildlife habitat is disappearing because of erosion, and New Orleans is sinking, and they need more money for the levees, and they need to build the levees up higher, and they need bigger gates, and the Corps of Engineers gets more money in Louisiana than anywhere else in the country for all of these projects. And it's always been known that the city of New Orleans was always siphoning off money, and the state of Louisiana was always siphoning off part of the money. And, I mean, the whole thing has just been a continuous sort of scandal, to be honest with you. And the fact that we would look at that and say, well, now that it's all been sort of destroyed, we're going to take and rebuild it exactly where it was like it was, I mean, it's just like a kind of a dumb decision.
Well, okay, there was money and funding for increasing the size of the levees and strengthening them,
right,
you say.
Right.
And yet the Army Corps of Engineers have been tearing down dams in other part of the country, correct?
Oh, yeah. And the people, the environmentalists have stopped them from doing certain kinds of canal work just outside of the levees, and the environmentalists have stopped them from raising the thing because they didn't, the levees, because they didn't do enough NEPA reports. And it's just, you know, all that was just a big target for all these lawsuits and these lawyers to make a fortune when they aren't suing to get mountain lions, you know, protected up in Iowa or whatever. So the whole thing has just been a kind of a dumb deal. So I don't know why we would even want to put it back in there, much less have government, federal government, do it. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it makes sense if you talk about totalitarianism.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you want to grow up and be just like Mao Zedong's China or Stalin's
Russia.
We'll
be right back. Stay with us. As we close out the broadcast with Jim Beers, we'll take, and the phone lines are filling up again. Let's take Ralph in Oklahoma. Ralph, welcome to the broadcast, Ralph.
A salute to both of you, and after that call from that GMO, genetically modified fruit cake, wanting to know what Jim was doing about all this, that disgusted me to the point that I had to call in.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I just wanted to express my opinion on the gratification, their disgust of the disgratification, I guess you should call it. So anyway, y'all carry on.
Thank you, Ralph.
Appreciate your work, both of you.
Very, very good. Thank you.
Thank
yes,
you.
Sir. Bye.
Okay, let's go to Jeff in New Mexico. Jeff, welcome to the broadcast.
Yeah, I don't think it's totalitarianism. I think Bush and them are afraid of offending the black welfare people that want to have public housing rebuilt for them in flood-prone areas. Again, you know, they're afraid that the blacks will riot like they did in L.A., so they just want to do what their minds think all the time.
I appreciate your good comment, Jeff. Thank you.
Okay.
You know, this goes way back to the Lyndon Johnson administration, people, the Civil Rights Act. You know, paying people to breed. I mean, come on, listeners. Connect the dots. Jim, we're in the middle of many things going on at this point in time, aren't we?
Oh, you bet we are. And the more we can talk about these things openly and discuss them and throw out the ideas out there, I think the better off we all are.
Okay, let's bring Carl in Oklahoma. Carl, welcome. Hello, Carl. Carl in Oklahoma, are you there? Okay, well, he's not there. Okay, so Jim, we wrap it up with you, my friend. This Endangered Species Act information is on our website. It's there for you to see. Very obvious what's going on, isn't it?
You bet it is, and I think the more people know about it, the better off we all are.
So the suggestion is going to AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K, not a C, on purpose. It's just the way it is, listeners. It's been this way for years. And for us to discount what's happened in the past, the wars in the past, to the wars in the present, is just showing your ignorance if you don't understand what's going on. You need to research. You need to study. You need to understand what's going on. Because without your input, without your concern, this continues. And learn about the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species and Wild Fauna and Flora. CITES, you call it, right, Jim?
That's correct, yep.
Any parting shot do you have for the listeners, Jim?
No, I don't. I just thank them for tuning in, and if they've got any questions or comments, they can always get a hold of me at the AllianceForAmerica.org. There's a, actually, it's there's articles of mine on that site, and it's got my email address and everything at the bottom of them, so you can always contact me that way.
AllianceForAmerica.org.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you. Good day to you.
Bye-bye. Okay. That's the AllianceForAmerica.org. Keep in mind, support the network, RBNLive.com, the Republic Trading Post, Republic Trading listeners. Very, very important to support Republic Trading. Tell them Chris sent you. Republic Trading, 800-691-7898, 800-691-7898. The Berkfield, the Berkey Light, 877-605-9200. Much of that money for that you purchased that Berkey Light goes to the airtime on my show. So tell them Chris sent you, listeners, and we'll be back tomorrow, God willing. Good afternoon.